The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Fantastic Four from 2015. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is it a fresh attempt at bringing a loved comic book series to the big screen, or is it just comical? We watched Fantastic Four from 2015 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Hello and welcome back to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features cast, the first episode of Season 4 of 2017. Oh my god. It's cool to be back. So I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend and king of cult cinema in Brisbane,
Christian Fletcher. Oh wow, thanks for having me back, Trevor. We've survived to another year or another season.
We have indeed. We just can't stop doing these things, can we?
Oh, if they stopped making bad movies, I think we'd have to rest, wouldn't we? But no, there's still many more things for us to dig into, and you can be sure with us, we always manage to uncover them.
I think if they stopped making movies, we'd still have plenty of material. So, all good. Now, unfortunately, we were hoping to have another guest on hand this evening. The movie, Fantastic Four from 2015, was chosen due to a friend of ours, Mr. Steve Beeston, who you may remember from when we covered Mazes and Monsters a couple of years back. Basically said that he wanted to know if we ever watched this, because it would be the only reason he would ever watch that movie. Technical issues, though, unfortunately mean he is not joining us this evening, so it would have been cool. Steve, we miss you, but we'll certainly try to get Steve on to the podcast as soon as we can. Now, speaking about the podcast, there is going to be a big difference this year in that we are going to be fortnightly, and it's going to be just the Redeeming Features cast. If you're the fan of the mini podcast, then you're in the minor of the people listening to the podcast. Sorry about that. But hey, look, we're still going to have room for special event podcasts, and you know, if we need to pop something extra in amongst the download feed, you know, that's always going to be an option. So hopefully you will join us on this journey as we make yet another change to the Rufus Project.
never-ending change, but at the same time, too, like the never-ending lineup of movies that we've got. So it seems like people like us redeeming or trying to redeem these movies.
Yeah, that definitely seems to be where most of the attention for the podcast goes. When you compare the stats on them, Redeeming Features comes out way on top. So everybody out there, you've got no one to blame but yourselves.
and it looks like we've got another title to launch for the new year.
We do indeed. So yeah, Fantastic Four, the remake directed by Josh Trank. He also did Chronicle, I think, was his big movie before this one, which was a very good movie, by the way. So he tried his hand at bringing this classic comic book collection of characters, that's a lot of alliteration, to the big screen. Now, if you haven't seen the movie, I've got a little synopsis here for you. After a trip to an alternate universe changes their physical forms, four young outsiders must learn to harness their incredible new powers and work together to save the planet.
Oh gosh, if only that description had been as interesting as the movie. But I'm not giving away too much just yet. But now, Now, Trevor, I'm coming into this completely blind because I must admit when I first, obviously heard that plot summary, I'm like going, oh, this sounds great. And I'm like, hang on, this was a movie already before this. And I'm like, hang on, have we supposed to have forgotten the other stuff? Now, I believe the Fantastic Four was a 2005 movie and this is a reboot of that.
That's right. Yep. And, the funny thing is that, it was interesting aside, not officially part of our trivia, but in the previous two Fantastic Four movies, because that 2005 one got a sequel, Chris Evans played one of the Fantastic Four, but of course he's now much more known as Captain America from the official Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. Fantastic Four is not a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, because it's owned by Fox. So, but we'll get into that a little bit in the trivia side of things. Don't you worry about that.
Oh, fantastic. I was scratching my head about a few things.
Oh, it's quite a tangled web. But, so let's push on. Let's push on to the turkey trivia. And if this is the first time you've heard our podcast, welcome aboard. What took you so long? Turkey trivia is where we talk turkey. So the facts and figures behind the movie, and then a bit of trivia, culled largely from IMDb, but it's an easy place to find it. So, Fantastic Four from 2015, it's rated 4.3 out of 10 on IMDb, so a bit below average there. It had a budget of $120 million, and its worldwide box office ended up coming just a little bit shy of $168 million. So by all accounts, this was a box office bomb.
Gosh, considering that, as we've said in the past, you usually just have to double the budget, including promotions, so that sort of gives you an idea of how the film fared, and yeah, with those figures, not the best.
Mm-hmm. Cast-wise, pretty much was a cast of hip young actors for this one. We have as the four, the Fantastic Four themselves, you have Miles Teller playing Reed Richards, or for those who do know the comic book, that's Mr. Incredible, the stretchy guy. Michael B. Jordan playing Johnny Storm, the fire guy. Kate Mara playing Sue Storm, the Invisible Girl. And Jamie Bell playing Ben Grimm / The Thing, the Rocky dude. And then we've also got Toby Kebbell playing Victor Von Doom. And then there's the rest. I don't think I've heard the rest.
Again, not many names that are really, striking my attention. Considering in the past, I think they had Jessica Alba and Julie McMahon, and as you said, Chris Evans performing. So I think with this reboot, they were trying to probably get, I don't know, as you said, hip, fresh, young actors to possibly keep the franchise going.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Miles Teller and Michael B. Jordan, I suppose, really ties into the whole Josh Trank connection because they were both in Chronicle before, I suppose, sticking with Josh Trank and coming over and doing Fantastic Four.
I'm wondering if they were happy they did it now.
Well, yeah, let's just say there was a lot of trivia relating to behind-the-scenes drama on this, so I've kind of just picked a few bits and pieces to focus on, rather than ties into the whole Josh Trank connection, because they were both in Chronicle before, I suppose, sticking with Josh Trank and coming over and doing Fantastic Four.
I'm wondering if they were happy they did it now.
Well, let's just say there was a lot of trivia relating to behind-the-scenes drama on this, so I've kind of just picked a few bits and pieces to focus on, rather than spending an hour talking about all the behind-the-scenes stuff that gets talked about in this movie. But even before it was actually released, I suppose it was behind the eight ball, because in a tweet on the 6th of August of 2015, which was very quickly deleted, Josh Trank said, and I quote, "A year ago, I had a fantastic version of this, and it would have received great reviews. You'll probably never see it. That's reality, though." End quote. And apparently after seeing his version, the studio mandated lots of reshoots, and the newer scenes can actually be spotted because Kate Mara cut her hair between finishing and the reshoots and had to wear a blonde wig. And Miles Teller had facial hair that would appear and disappear between shots depending on when those particular bits of those scenes were filmed.
Oh, gosh, all this extra stuff now that I should have actually been looking for if I'd known.
I know.
But,
yeah, so,
but, God, by the sounds of it, plagued with disaster from the outset, this movie. Gosh, I can imagine, though, that Josh Trank would have been quite unhappy, too, because it sounds like his script has been changed a lot, too.
Yeah, I mean, I know there was quite a buzz when it was announced that he was going to be doing it. Like, people, like, in the geeky community, we're super duper excited. I listened to a lot of the Kevin Smith podcast, and he was just going, you know, he was just loving the fact that Josh Trank was going to be at the helm of Fantastic Four. But apparently, the reshoots were demanded mainly due to, well, first off, there were creative differences between Josh Trank and Fox, and the Fox studios thought that his version of the film was way too violent.
That's interesting. You're interested to know if they'd gone the more violent option, you know, because look at, say, recent movies like Deadpool and things like that. The violence is quite high in those sort of movies, and I suppose I haven't seen it, but Suicide Squad, I'm assuming, would too. So it seems like an interesting thing for them to have been like. But Fox not being, as you said, not being a main Marvel movie, maybe that could be something to do with it. I don't know.
Yep. I will be coming on to that, by the way, in a couple of trivia points. It still is linked to the Marvel brand and the normal tropes you normally associate with Marvel movies or Marvel movies based on Marvel characters. However, with this one, Stan Lee declined to make a cameo in the film.
Oh, gosh. Even he didn't want to.
Yeah, but like when asked about his opinion on the Human Torch being black, because that was also quite controversial at the time, Stan Lee said he very much approved. So I don't think he was against the movie, but obviously I think he figured out where it was going and decided not to be directly associated with it.
Yeah, and I don't know whether his involvement would have been there from the outset or whether they saw it was just a sinking ship and thought, gosh, let's bring him in so it kind of gives it a bit more cred. I don't know, but...
And with regards to that, because obviously before the Marvel Cinematic Universe was a thing, Marvel was quite happy to sell its characters off to the highest bidders. And the characters in this film would have reverted back to Marvel if the film was delayed past 2015, because Fox basically had a 7-year window to produce a new Fantastic Four film, and it had to be released within 1 year of that expiry. So they pretty much took it right up to the limit so that they could still keep control of the characters.
Very interesting, and you do wonder, too, if, yeah, this would have had something to do about the quality of the film as well, too, whether it was very much a rushed piece, but or they wanted to wait as long as they possibly could so that they could get away from the 2005 version, you know, enough time between it. But, yeah, it is interesting. I was quite surprised even seeing the Fox logo at the start and then I think a smaller logo from Marvel. It just seemed like a weird thing to see them producing, you know... one of these sort of things. That said, I probably am not the one to speak about and know about that sort of universe anyway. So it all sort of blends in for me, so I wouldn't even know.
That's okay. Well, you just remember there's Disney Marvel, there's Fox Marvel, and there's Sony Marvel.
Oh, gosh, the confusion starts.
but Marvel, the actual comic books company, wasn't too fond of the direction that the film was going, and they actually made a mention of it in a particular Marvel comic, being the Punisher, and then it has the Fantastic Four in the likeness of the cast members of this film, who get taken down in a massive explosion. So that was just Marvel's comment on what they thought the movie was going to be, what the outcome was going to be.
And from the sounds of it, it didn't exactly sort of reboot, because I think in my notes here, I've got, they were looking at, I think a sequel was actually planned to come out this year. So I think they would have quickly pulled that idea.
Yeah, but we're not getting a sequel to this version of Fantastic Four. But however, once that 7 years is up, I'm sure we'll get another reboot. So 2022, expect another Fantastic Four movie, just so Fox keeps his hands on the rights.
And it could be of varying degrees of quality, we don't know. But anyway, this film, though.
But isn't a post-Deadpool world now, because that's another... when you look at moments in comic book to movie history, the launch of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is your big first, oh my god. I suppose X-Men movies before that were made quite a bit of headway. And then Deadpool changed the whole scenario again. But that's a whole different discussion for another time, I think.
Definitely. So I'm sort of getting a bit up to speed now with this movie that we have watched.
Absolutely. Now, before we talk about the movie itself and go through, I suppose, some of the experiences we had while watching it, we do need to set our baseline. Now, again, if you're new to the podcast, our whole idea is we watch these movies that were badly rated or badly reviewed or bombed at the box office or just basically has some bad reputation in some way, in an effort to find out if there's any redeeming features and if the movie is redeemable as a whole. But before we do that, we like to set a baseline. So I head to Amazon and I grab a review to set that baseline. So the title of this review is I Tried Hard to Like This. I tried hard to like this. Sure, it has some good things going for it. Yeah, there wasn't anything really good about this movie. I wasn't even sure it fit into the Marvel Universe, as big as that is. Why is it that they take a potentially great topic and constantly turn it into slime? Really? Sue is adopted? Johnny has a brother? I'm all for diversity, but hey, I don't recall the Fantastic Four ever being a group of mixed-race heroes. The Thing was a tad heavy, more like Thing 1 and Thing 2 combined. It could have been toned down some. Now, I'm not even going to mention the strange need to substitute a planet for a cosmic storm in a spaceship. It's probably the one planet that is safe from Galactus, though. All in all, swallowing razor blades would have been a lot less painful than slogging through this over-the-top, who wrote this junk movie. I'd recommend that before purchasing this movie yourself, make a point to watch 2 hours of Mr. Rogers first in preparation to watch this movie. 1 star.
Ooh, again, he tried very hard to like it, but yeah, couldn't really pinpoint anything. So hopefully we can do opposite. But yeah, as you say, Trevor, it can only go up or maybe sideways from here.
And I think we have had some things where we've even managed to take it lower than the one-star review. We'll see how we go. Now, first up, I was taken out of this. Christian, 1 hour and 39 minutes. I'm hoping that this sets a good trend for this year.
I must admit, this is great. And, you know, and even better when the fact that the closing credits seem to sort of amount to about sort of 9 minutes of the hour 39. So, yeah, it was a lot more palatable. So I will take note, Trev, and make sure I make every movie 2 hours from now on.
Gee, thanks. Yeah, I mean, it certainly, when you talk about origin stories, this one certainly goes a fair way back. For two of the main characters, in that we start off seeing, I'll use the character names, Reed Richards and Ben Grimm, basically hanging out in and outside of high school.
And they have to sort of start that buddy connection straight away. And already I'm sort of going, what kind of movie is this going to be? It's almost like when I grow up, I want to be a fireman. When I grow up, I'm going to be one of the Fantastic Four. Even though I think he does kind of open with a sort of similar scene. So I think he says he wants to create a teleporter, I think it is. I don't know if he's bringing it in. Or he wants to do dimensional travel. So, so yeah, they are definitely establishing it straight away. But yeah, gosh, Trev, taking the origin movie or the superhero origin movie been pretty much running with it as much as possible. They don't waste any time getting into it.
Yeah, and no, don't waste much time in setting up the stereotypes. You know, Reed Richards, he's a super clever, awkward kid who gets ridiculed at school because he's really too clever for the school. And then Ben is this tough guy who lives with his family at a junkyard.
How convenient is called Grim Junkyard. I just thought there Grim was just junkyard, these little things yep, where they're yep. just trying to hit it home, aren't they? I know that was his surname, but I'm like, yeah, we get the feeling life's grim for you. It's going to get grimmer.
and so they bond over the fact that Reed Richards is making this teleporter machine in his garage. And it was only a quick thing, but I couldn't help noticing when they were panning past what was powering the computing power for this particular teleporting machine. It was a bank of Nintendo 64s. And I just went, okay, it's powered by Nintendo 64s.
Oh gosh, it was just one of those things. As soon as I saw this scene and knowing that, okay, this kid's able to do this in his basement, I think anything's possible. But now that you've said the Nintendos, I would have looked at it in a whole new light.
Yeah, I've got to admit that was probably the first time I went, oh, hang on, that's actually kind of clever. Like, also, I suppose also placing when it was happening. Obviously happening around the Nintendo 64 era, but I'm guessing that his parents must have been, well, his mum and stepfather. They do stress out a few times that Reed Richards has a stepfather who doesn't really care about him. That's not at all, it's so subtle how they bring that in.
Not a stereotype at all. Not a film trope at all.
But they're certainly happy enough to buy him about 24 Nintendo 64s at a time you'd be paying a premium price for them.
I know, and that's what I was even thinking about with the other guy. What was Reed? I think it was the fact that his parents are happy for him just to do whatever under the house, all these explosions, and shoot out the whole power of the whole street. So yeah, as you said, where was he getting the money for this?
Indeed. Oh, that's it was never mentioned until I suppose the plot proper. Well, I don't know. It's hard to know where the plot proper starts in this movie, but we can cover that as we go through. But yeah, so they black everything out, and then it doesn't waste much time, and we get to see them taking their contraption to a science fair, where things, of course, don't go to plan.
But there's always the typical, oh, someone who goes, I believe in you and I want you to work for me. So there's always that typical character that comes in, and that's sort of the next thing they're whisked away to, I don't know really what you'd call it, I just scientific research, I don't know.
Well, yeah,
I remember the name that he mentioned.
It was like a university of some sort, but it had this warehouse-sized lab in it where they were just building this massive piece of machinery. But before that, I mean, I like, in our introduction to one of the other main characters, Sue Storm, played by Kate Mara, it's just like, she gets like one word, and you're thinking, gee, that's a great way to introduce a character.
Yeah. I know, even though, as we said, it doesn't waste much time getting into it, but yeah, when they do finally get into it, she's not really saying too much, so.
Yeah, and then, and yeah, actually, the other thing too is Reed and Ben just assume that when they teleport something, it goes off to some random desert somewhere around the somewhere else on the globe. And then when I can't remember his full name, but when the father of Johnny and Sue Storm steps up and explains that they're actually teleporting it to another dimension and bringing it back, they just kind of just casually accept it. It's like, oh, okay then. That explains it.
Yeah. Oh, it's just getting it from a beach over in blah blah. Yeah. It is all very blasé, and it's almost like, and normally they do sort of things like that if they were just trying to get, you know, as you said, getting into the plot proper. Okay, we've let that go. But as you said, it's kind of, you don't really know when it's starting. So for that to be sort of a throwaway thing and to be accepted, I don't know. But then I think it's a lot of the things that happen in this movie just have to be accepted.
Yeah, well, because they, I mean, right from the early point, it's like, it's all played, like, so serious and straight-laced when they're talking about these ridiculous things. And then when you get to meet, the outsider geek who wants to be left alone, Victor Von Doom, I mean, how can anyone deal with that with a straight face? I don't understand when you introduce this guy who, by name alone, is destined for bad guy status.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, and all the, and yeah, especially as you said, like this really introvert that's just sort of, yeah, wanting to go again. And you know, he's, especially as soon as he meets, is it Ben, or when he, sort of reacquaints himself with, is it Ben? Sorry, no, Reed. How he's so standoffish. We're like, oh, we know where this is going. And I think even, not to step too far ahead, but of course later on when, very later scene when he's after Sue rather than, it's almost like it's still the whole, you know, love triangle going on between the three of them.
Yeah, but there was no chemistry, so it's always good when you have, like, a what appears to be some sort of triangle forming, but there's no chemistry whatsoever. You just go, you guys are just wasting my time with this.
Yeah, exactly.
but yeah, Victor sort of, like, goes on a rant about, you know, how he doesn't want to deal with this thing that they're building because the government's going to take it and use it and exploit it. He basically repeats the same thing at least three times over in slightly different ways. It's like, we get it. We get it. We understand. You explained your character in one sentence. You don't need to tell us the same thing two more times for us to get it. But then that later, that pales into comparison with something that happens later in the movie.
And as I said, we're really setting up the whole fact that we know where this is going. You are going to be the bad guy.
And then, I mean, the whole team, the four of them that get together to build this massive interdimensional teleporter, which is a very important plot point, they really get put together by duress. I mean, Victor kind of gets shamed into joining by Dr. Storm basically implying that, you know, Reed Richards worked out what he couldn't. So, you know, there's a bit of a pride thing going there. Johnny Storm crashes his car and then, you know, his dad says, you're not getting your car back unless you actually work for me and basically pay it off. The only two that seem to want to be there are Reed and Sue, but then even Sue, she just kind of seems to be taking it along because there's nothing better for her to do, because she likes patterns for some reason, and that makes her a good contribution to building this massive interdimensional transport thing.
Oh, she's good at patterns, but she has to have music in her ears at all times, too.
Because the music has patterns! The music has patterns, Christian! It has patterns! And she likes the patterns in music as well. As we find out why she explains in extreme detail why she's listening to a piece of particular music. Whatever! I don't care!
It's like, just get into some semblance of a plot for us, you know. But then, yeah, we do seem to be kind of waiting a bit. But that said, it still seemed to be like no time before he's over at the university and working for them. So, but you'd think it would get into it a little bit quicker that way. But we, we have Sue Storm, who, as you said, seems to be more than happy to tag along for the ride.
Yeah, and then, this reminds me of the thing, is when, cause there's a couple of awkward interactions between Sue and Reed, and then he asks if she's adopted when her father is, her father and brother are both, well, basically persons of colour. no doubt about it. And he goes, so are you adopted? What do you think? You're meant to be the smartest guy here, Reed. I mean, my God.
I misheard it as him going, oh, you're adopted, meaning like he knows already. So that's why I didn't actually see it as a question. That makes it even, that's ridiculous.
But even making it as a statement would be, So you're trying to explain why this, because it's barely mentioned that you know, like that Johnny and Sue are brother and sister. It barely gets mentioned. I don't even know if we hear too much of the last name. But I think they just got to the point just saying, have we made it clear that they're brother and sister? Maybe we should just put something in to make it clear that they're brother and sister.
Just one more.
And it ends up just being this either blatant statement or stupid question, depending on which way you look at it.
So I think it's around this point where all of them are pretty much, so as you said, they've all been brought together now and they all start to work on this transport. And I don't know if it's around the time where Victor sort of gives in and decides to come and help them, I think, after they find him.
Yeah, that's right. They all get together by duress and then we get the planning and construction montage.
Of course. But it actually happens quite early, but then get over and done with. But early for a movie, actually, to have such a montage.
Christian, would you really want them to have dragged that bit out further?
I actually should miss me more. I shouldn't be analysing anything that this movie comes up with at this stage.
Yeah, but yeah, they get it built after Doctor. I really should look up the proper character name for the father, shouldn't I?
I have a list here that has every character but, so I think Dr. Storm sounded like a good idea, but
yes,
it might
yes,
be
Dr. Franklin Storm. There he is.
Oh, there you go.
Because yeah, he had to convince this board of serious looking people in suits to fund this, and then so when they got it built, you know, anytime like a convoy of black cars roll up and guys in suits step out, you know it's never a good sign.
Yeah. It is funny sitting him there trying to convince these guys that he picked up at a science fair. Oh, no, they're legit. We're going to put all this money into it, even though apparently he's done this before. And I think that's where Victor comes in, or, you know, there's someone where they've tried to make it work in the past. But it does seem very quick for them to talent scout, I suppose, from a science fair mm-hmm. straight to the boardroom.
Because yeah, apparently, because Victor could never bring anything back from a convoy of black cars roll up and guys in suits step out, you know it's never a good sign.
Yeah. It is funny sitting him there trying to convince these guys that he picked up at a science fair. Oh, no, they're legit. We're going to put all this money into it, even though apparently he's done this before. And I think that's where Victor comes in, or, you know, there's someone where they've tried to make it work in the past. But it does seem very quick for them to talent scout, I suppose, from a science fair mm-hmm. straight to the boardroom.
Because yeah, apparently, because Victor could never bring anything back from the other dimension. That was the issue, I believe.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then Reed managed to build something in his garage that could do what they'd been trying to do in this lab for an indeterminate amount of time.
Because I think they even say something about, yeah, we've spent all this time and with a bit of alfoil and sticky tape, he's managed to get it to work or put a black hole in the universe. So, yeah, so they definitely know that he's onto something, but even if his methods are a bit unusual and a bit hard to believe.
Mm-hmm. And then of course, once they do the demonstration and send a monkey there and back unharmed, and then find out that they're not going to be the ones going. As soon as they say, oh, we're going to get some NASA astronauts to go over, it's like, okay, yep, they're definitely going to do an unauthorized field trip. And they will have a drink and go for an unauthorized field trip.
Because that's what you do. You get really, really drunk and go and operate this, I suppose illegal is not the word, but yeah, an unplanned expedition. But I was going to say, it was very spontaneous. I think he even decides to call. That's right. That's when actually Ben gets involved. The poor guy just wanted to sleep. I bet he's wishing he had now when Reed rings Ben up and says, you've got to come in and do this with us. So,
yeah, because Ben kind of gets left behind for you know, a good part of this the section of the movie. You sort of like they say goodbye at the door to this university, and then suddenly Reed's a bit drunk, calling him up early in the morning saying, you've been part of this, you've got to come over with us.
Okay. Yeah, what's sort of weird bringing him back in? But it's almost like, oh gosh, we need another character. We better, I'm not another character, but we need to make our Fantastic Four. Because one is potentially going to go missing, let's just say. Spoiler alert,
yeah,
but
yes, yeah. Yes. So, but yeah, I've got to admit though, when they were doing this and they were getting ready to go and it was Ben Reed, Johnny and Victor, I was thinking, so how are they going to justify Sue getting her powers? I'm not too sure, but, I mean, they get there eventually, you know, after they have their adventure in another dimension and for these, super smart, people who are very cluey with the science side of things. They're not very scientific once they get there and they get there and they find a glowing green goo puddle and one of them just like, sticks his hand in it, you know?
Because that's what you do, of course, you know, especially on an unauthorized mission.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're thinking, that's very clever, guys, you know, you just kind of decided you'd go exploring and stick your hand in a puddle of alien green goo. I mean, what did you think was going to happen, you great moronic twit?
Oh, but of course they wanted to get their names. They want, because weren't they saying that, yeah, because Neil Armstrong, everyone remembers him and not the team behind him. Like, guys, I think I'd rather stay at home than have to deal with what's going to be facing me in that other dimension.
Absolutely. Of course everything goes pear-shaped. And, they can't seal the capsule, which is why they bring all this, they come home with all this stuff covering them and Sue, who's finally turned up to try to help them get back from the other dimension, gets caught in the explosion of stuff coming out of this capsule when they get back, and bam! Suddenly superpowers.
And that's how she gets connected with it, yeah, because I was wondering, cause that's the thing I was waiting the whole time coming, she's going to jump in at the last minute or something's going to happen and she's going to get the radiation or whatever it is on her. So yeah, we've now solved the how she gets involved as well, so... And I think it was, I'm not sure if it's straight after, but yeah, very much Dr. Franklin Storm having to deal with sort of what's happened to his kids.
Yeah, yeah. I did like how they went to Area 57, because obviously Area 51 was too mainstream, so Area 57 was a bit more hipster.
A bit more modern. And hey, we've got a hip modern cast. We've got to put all these hip modern new things in it. So, but yeah, no, I thought it was cool that they actually put up some sort of a thing. So, I don't know. It was, I think it's probably only at the start and that bit that they actually had sort of title cards or anything like that. I don't think it was used again. But yeah, at least we know where they were. So,
And it was about, it was around about this time that I paused the movie. I was just curious, and so it basically took half of the movie's running length to get to the point where they got powers.
Oh, I know. Oh, someone, yes, you've said exactly what I was thinking, you know, especially when you go into these movies expecting a display of their powers throughout, or at least three quarters of the movie, so I was very much the same, Trevor. You're like, okay, origin story aside, give us something.
But then it just kind of keeps going with the setup of the characters even further. Like Reed Richards, who's now all stretchy escapes. And I've got to say, some of those stretch effects were just disturbing.
Oh, I know.
When he's stretching his legs through the vents.
I was thinking later on when he has that fight scene with that guy, it was just kind of, oh, this is how can anyone have taken this seriously? And by the sounds of it, no one did.
Yeah, but I mean... you know, of course, it gets all military, and Ben Grimm is now the thing. I don't know if they actually specifically call him that until the end of the movie.
I just think Rockman the whole time. I'm just waiting for him to come out with a boulder or a stone type pun at every moment. But then I've got to keep remembering it's not Mr. Freeze from Batman and Robin.
Yeah, his catchphrase I remember from the old cartoon series was "It's clobbering time," which does get a mention a bit further on.
Oh, but, is that what he says? I've got here something time, because I'm like going, that was the one, that was actually the line that made me go, oh, Mr. Freeze. And I think I'm glad that it wasn't puns like that the whole way through, because that would have really taken the movie down even lower of a notch.
Yeah, I don't think Josh Trank would have approved. I'm pretty sure that was part of the reshoots. But yeah, but again, talking about cliches, so you've got the tough guy from the junkyard, you know, he's perfectly fine to go off and join the military after they say, hey, we'll help you if you help us. And Johnny Storm, who can now set himself on fire and fly, he seems happy to join the military stuff because, of course, but good old Sue with her patterns, she's not too sure. She wants to hold out, but she still trains with the military. And when they finally track down Reed, they send Ben in after him. And the fight scene between those two? God, that CGI was ropey.
Oh, I know. It was awful. Yeah, that was bendy.
Yeah. I don't think there's any way, because I've seen scenes of some of the earlier Fantastic Four movies, and I think in a live-action movie, I just don't know if there's any way to make Reed Richards' stretch powers look anything other than awkward. It just doesn't work on the screen. Thankfully, we don't get to see too much of it. I think when it comes back, like later in the movie, because it's basically in a scene which is pretty much all CGI, it doesn't stand out so much. But when they're fighting in a forest with some real people hanging around and trees and stuff in the background, it just screams out as bad CGI. Badly implemented CGI.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And I was thinking that. And you're thinking, hey, if this is from 2015, maybe it is a character, you know, being a recent film. So, you know, if they're still not being able to make it look convincing. So, but as you said, maybe, yeah, maybe it is hard to show him on film all round. But, yeah, I cringed a bit at this part as well.
And, yeah, because they've got to get him back because they apparently can't rebuild this thing that was completely built and would have had full schematics. And the whole box and dice there, they could not get it working without Reed Richards being there. And do we mention that Victor didn't make it back? I'm not sure if we did mention that earlier.
Oh, I think but we might kind of forget. Oh, I gave a bit of a spoiler to say that five become four. But let's just say the four guys go, they lose Victor, and then they come back. I think that's what we pretty much...
Yeah. But mind you, they pretty much don't even mention Victor for, you know, this the whole middle part of this movie. He's just forgotten about entirely. But of course, when they go back and they send, like, they send government heavy dudes back, but there's Victor. I don't know what he's been eating, but he's still alive and looking rather different. For those who know the character Dr. Doom, he's not quite the comic book Dr. Doom. They've decided to make him a bit more on the disfigured and distorted side rather than just that straight steel mask that many may know from the comic books.
Oh, I was wondering what they were getting at with that. So again, another decision that was probably not an interesting decision they've made, obviously, for this movie.
Yeah, again, trying to make it just that bit different and that bit more edgy, I suppose. But again, once he came back, and remember this is a movie that goes for 1 hour and 39 minutes, including credits, and the big bad, Dr. Doom, turns up at 1 hour 12.
Oh, I know. And it almost feels like such an afterthought at this stage, because as you said, we haven't really mentioned him much in the lead up to this part of the movie, especially the whole middle part. So, but I know when they lose him, or I don't know if that's the right terminology, but yeah, I suppose when they leave him behind, I am thinking the whole time something's going to happen again with him. But as you said, no mention of him's made up until this point, so it seems very much an afterthought.
Yeah, but yeah, I've got to admit, like, what happens from here happens pretty fast. He immediately starts killing people and can seem to basically instantly burst people's head with the powers of Doom, but when he gets to Franklin Storm, Franklin gets to have a good last words and last touching moment. Everybody else gets insta killed, but at least he gets to have a bit of a say. Before Doom heads off and creates a black hole, and oh, look, it's a sky beam. Everything's got a sky beam. Now, have you noticed that? There's so many sky beams in these sort of movies.
Oh, my God, yes. But you just, as you said, knowing what running time we're up to, you're thinking to yourself, what's possibly, you know, are we going to have some really epic short, possibly, fight scene or quick fight scene play out? So, yeah, you are wondering sort of the last ending of this movie, especially when they've thrown a bad guy in sort of the last minute.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, the sky beam that lets the Fantastic Four use their powers to get safely through this black hole that's apparently going to suck the entire Earth through it to this thing that destroys everything at the other side. I don't know, but I had to laugh when they landed and they're there, and then Reed, like, blatantly explains exactly what Dr. Doom is doing to the other characters, as if... And I believe that they basically had worked it out, and there was a conversation about what he was doing before they left. But then when they got there, he just had to specifically have this incredible out of nowhere line of saying, oh, he set up that force field on the other side of the black hole that's going to suck everything through and destroy the Earth. We should stop him.
Maybe they thought we'd forgotten already or something. Or they thought we were asleep by that stage, and they had to, I don't know, just test us one last time.
I think there were a few times during this movie where they just said, have we explained things properly? I think we just better put something in explaining it again just in case.
Well, hey, this is an origin story, so they're probably thinking, how many things can we explain to the best of our ability? So, but yeah, as you said, by the time we're getting to the third half of the movie, the third section of the movie, you shouldn't be still having to reveal things or repeat them.
Mm-hmm, or blatantly explain the plot. But, I mean, after they obviously, you know, they obviously have to attack him one by one, and none of them can defeat him. And then, you know, Reed's going, Victor, don't do this. And I think this is probably what gave me the biggest laugh in the entire movie, in that the line that Victor comes back with, for fans of Ghostbusters, the delivery of it is almost identical, when he goes, there is no Victor, only Doom. I merely thought, there is no Dana, only Zool, and almost fell off my chair.
Oh, God, yes, I did notice that as well, and oh.
I don't know if it was deliberately trying to ape that line, but anyone who's familiar with Ghostbusters would not be able to see that without immediately thinking that.
But it's honestly, it's probably influenced so many sort of things of that sort of kind that it's probably hard for us to separate them. But yeah, what a blatant ripoff. I think I'd probably see it as homage. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, just a nice little thing to try to put, I don't know if I try to add levity or just try to reference something better. Did I just give something away?
But like, so late in the movie too, like, it's like, don't try and be funny or clever now. Maybe they think that they've won us over by now, but no, that's changing the whole tone completely.
This movie has been so earnest and serious the whole way through, to do a kind of like offhand reference to a much more amusing movie that I think when Ghostbusters, like when the tower got turned into the conductor, I'm pretty sure there was a bit of a sky beamy thing happening there too.
Oh yeah, that was too. So actually we might be able to compare a lot of things between the two movies. You never know.
Well, when you got sky beams, there's a lot of movies you can compare it to. So a lot of people have gone for the sky beam trope. But of course, after that, after Reed realizes there is only Doom, that's when we get the let's all work together speech.
Oh, yes. But, oh, I was going to say, and finally, these powers that we're wanting them to display are finally, even though we've seen sort of a very, very bare minimum of what they can display, we're finally given a show of what they can actually do, something that I think was sorely missed throughout most of the movie.
Yeah, we got like flashes. I'm guessing that, again, like against real world settings, the CGI stood out so sorely. But then in the CGI landscape in this other dimension, you know, it actually worked better because everything was CGI. So there was nothing for it to stand out in stark contrast to. I think that's the only time that I thought Reed Richards was in even remotely convincing with the stretchiness. But of course, they all work together. They destroy the sky beam and get out in the nick of time to get back to the massive crater where poor old Area 57 used to be. No more hipster area.
It'll be on to a different one next movie, but they weren't to make another one, so it might have been a good thing. But yeah, I think it's then they work out that they've got a, I don't know, I've got a note here about Central City. I think that's the name of where they all go back to work for the government. I'm not sure what Central City's in reference to. I've forgotten.
because they go back and they're basically being told that they need to work for the government, and they just go, Nope, we're going to do our own thing. And you're going to give us a secret base. And they get given a secret base. And they're at the secret base. And they're talking about what they're going to call themselves. And of course, just as CGI Thing Dude is about to say Fantastic Four, it cuts to the closing credits with the big Fantastic Four plastered across the screen. Oh.
I must admit, I found this part quite laughable too. I know, probably because we know the name of the movie, but when they're trying to come up with the title, it just seemed so forced and so obvious, but it's probably because we know the movie title, but yeah. And of course, it had to end with that last little bit, which I thought was quite tacky and not putting the logo up, but ending with them coming up with the name and more the idea that they were possibly wanting to do another couple of movies and they thought this was just the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Well, I mean, I don't think anyone makes a movie nowadays without thinking that there's going to be a sequel. That planning doesn't pan out. Let's put it that way.
And, I was even surprised with the box office, results of this, considering that a lot of those films do usually have a sort of built-in audience that sort of automatically go and want to see what it's all about, but possibly word of mouth probably spread very quickly with this, or there was, as you said, a lot of behind-the-scenes drama, so maybe it was pretty obvious from the outset where this movie was going.
Yeah, I think the director tweeting a week before the movie comes out that it wasn't the movie he made isn't really good when it comes to box office. I don't think it helps.
Yeah, and especially as you said that so many people were excited about him directing it, so if it wasn't to be his vision, I can see why kind of gone a bit pear-shaped, and I think it's probably been a good thing that they didn't give us any more, unless maybe in 2025 or whenever we said we may get another one.
Yeah, when Fox is on the verge of losing the rights again, I'm sure another one will come out, because business?
Yeah, and we need more movies to talk about, that's probably another reason.
That is true. So if we're still doing this in 7 years' time when the next one comes out, we're going to be there.
Definitely. That's a good thing. Boy. I was a bit too enthusiastic with that. But, yes, we're already giving away a few ideas on how we could be feeling about this movie.
Indeed. Actually, one thing I didn't mention earlier, I'll just quickly mention it now, is, and I noticed it's like when it came out, is the poster did that thing where it replaced one of the letters with the number. You know, you often see it for sequels where they'll chuck the number in the middle of the word or whatever, but for the longest time, due to that poster, I can't help but think of this movie as being called Fanced Fourstick.
Oh, yes, because I'll be looking at it in a whole new light now, do you realise?
Yep, so So yeah, so, we got to the closing credits. This, again, just like there was no Stan Lee, there was no, end credits scene, which is almost unheard of for these sort of movies now. Christian, unless you wanted to bring out anything else, you noticed in the movie itself, would you like to talk about your thoughts, with regards to the redeemability of this movie?
Oh, wow. I don't think I even would have enough redeeming features, positive or otherwise, to add too much to it. But going in completely blind, as I always am with these sort of movies, I thought, okay, you've got a superhero origin movie here, which, fair enough, these things need to happen. We need to know sort of a bit of a background about these characters. But as you mentioned, you know, there was so many times where they really hit home the point when it really, you know, we know what's happening. Probably one of the only good things to going for the film is probably the running time of being 99 minutes. But I really didn't like not utilizing the powers enough. And I think, as you said, I think it was probably not being wanting to show it in real world time because it just wouldn't have worked with the CGI. I mean, just wouldn't have worked, and works much better with the CGI. So as a result, it was just the whole movie was spent setting up something that really didn't happen. I actually watched it with a friend of mine, and at the end I said, oh, what were your thoughts? And he said, I was waiting for a movie to happen. And I think that sums it up quite well. And it almost makes me want them to do a sequel so that I can bloody see what's happening next. It's because I feel like that hour and a half was really just not much to have even got into or was setting up something that really wasn't going anywhere. So I'm going to have to say definitely, Trevor, irredeemable. And no, I would never want to watch this again. And I think it's actually kind of killed me ever wanting to see any of the Fantastic Four movies. So shame on Fox for releasing this version, because it has probably killed the franchise overall, I'm thinking.
Maybe we should have done the earlier ones first, because apparently they're a lot more campy. Like your camp.
it might have had some more redeemable features.
Fair enough. Well, that was very, very quick and very to the point. So, I think that's a definitive not redeemable from Christian. Now, another thing, again, I just realized there was a bit of trivia I wanted to add was the fact that, after its release, when the Razzies came around in 2016, this movie pretty much swept the Razzies. With regards to all those wonderful awards. And it was due to, I suppose, you know, the sweeping of the Razzies. There was all these rumors that were flying around about it and stories and that tweet from Josh Trank. I was thinking about all of that as I sat down to watch this movie. And in a way, I think I put my expectations so low that it managed to get a bit higher. Saying that though, I mean, look, the movie was 3/4 set up, which I think even for an origin story is just way too much. And so for the payoff that was there was so rushed and with such bare minimum attention paid to the actual bad guy that it was almost pointless being there. At first, like during the early scenes, even though they were quite serious and stern, the acting was quite serviceable. But then again, once it got to the halfway point, the dialogue and interactions just went downhill fast. I mentioned before the CGI. Oh god, that ropey CGI. You may have noticed that they never really spent too long with the thing focused on the screen at any one time, I think for very good reason. Because, yeah, again, the CGI only worked when you had a full CGI background. This is a movie from a Marvel brand with no Stan Lee cameo or end credits scene, which I believe is now against the laws of nature. I mean, it probably would have been hard for this movie to be as bad as I expected it was going to be, but it was still a long, long way away from good. There were some moments that showed promise, and I always think that's probably the most unforgivable thing when they do show you what the movie could have been, but then fail to deliver badly. So this movie is not redeemable. We're starting off the new year with a completely non-redeemed movie.
I actually think that's quite fitting, you know. What a way to launch the redeeming features. But, and as you say, it can only really go up from here, so...
Isn't that baseline movie? There we go.
and as you said, I think our thoughts are very, very clear about this movie. So, but I'm sure there are some insane people out there that might want to watch it or have seen it that actually like it. But I know it's
funny
not going to be me again.
Funny you should mention that. Funny you should mention that because even this movie has its fans, and because hey, look, the name of the podcast is Redeeming Features, and we do like to end on a positive note. So I went back to Amazon and I dug up another review, I suppose, to give that that final positive viewpoint. The title of this review is Critics. I am so disturbed by the critics on this. I have read Marvel Comics since I can remember. I loved this story from the start. The cast was a beautiful choice and Matt was the perfect director. Well, he got that wrong. I wish I could have seen his final story in this and what he had planned. He made an old story new. Michael Johnson and Miles Teller together, again, is fantastic. They have natural chemistry. Kara is someone I will follow for years. I saw this in theatres and am proud to own it. It breaks my heart that they didn't keep the sequel. The way they portrayed the Thing was perfect. Screw the film critics. You want a movie to get lost in? Watch this. I don't have their education, but I know Marvel. This is worth your time to get involved in this story. 5 stars.
Oh, gosh. This, they're a real fan, aren't they? Gosh.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, look, if anyone can enjoy these movies, good luck to them. That's all I can say. If someone can take anything positive out of a movie, then I guess that's something.
But hey, every film's got to have a fan of some description, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think even the most atrocious movies that we've watched over the past few years had their fans, which is fine. I'm not here to judge, even if you're wrong.
We're only just here to watch them and give our opinion and hopefully redeem them. But in this case, no.
No, not at all. So, from a not redeemable movie to start us off for 2017, makes me wonder, where can we go from here, Christian?
Oh, gosh, Trevor, we can go in so many different places, places that you probably didn't even think we'd go with the podcast.
Ooh.
Okay, well, I will give you a bit of context. I've actually recently just got back from an Elvis festival, so I'm very deep in Elvis at the moment, listening to lots of music. I'm going back to a lot of the movies, and I've sort of started. I've watched a lot of the films over the years, but I thought, oh, I really want to start watching all of the movies and finally see all. I think it was in 32 in total. And then I thought to myself, wow, there's some really bad ones out there, a lot that I hadn't seen before. And I thought, hang on. What if I get one of the worst Elvis movies and we try and redeem it? And Trevor, that is what we will be doing. I've managed to get a list, found what is regarded as the worst Elvis movie of all time, and we are going to try and redeem 1965's Harum Scarum.
Harum Scarum. I'm aware of the movie. I can't remember if I have actually ever seen it. I think... growing up, Elvis movies were on at fairly regular intervals on weekend TV. So I don't know, I may watch it and see it, but you know, I'm always willing to give something a try. I can't say I've ever been a big fan of the Elvis movies, but I will certainly give this a try.
Sounds like a plan. I thought, you know, if I have to endure them, I'll make you at least endure one. So let's see if it really is the worst one out of his 32 movies. And I think you'll be happy, Trevor. I think it runs at 85 minutes too, which is probably a really big bonus as well.
There we go. Cool. Well, it's rated 4.7 on IMDb, so a little bit higher than Fantastic Four. So we might have some luck with this one. So, for anyone out there who wants to watch it before the next podcast, I've done the great thing of person on podcast looks up something on the internet, and it is available to rent or buy through iTunes, and through the Microsoft Store. So if you have access to either of those services and want to check this out, there's your way to check it out. So, yeah.
Fantastic. There's no avoiding it.
Oh, good. Now, like I said a bit earlier, we are making a few changes to the podcast. So since we no longer have that mini podcast, I'm now chucking in a little section. Well, I mean, I haven't thought of a witty name for it just yet, but basically we're going to have a plug section. So things can be plugged. So again, unfortunately, Steve could not join us this evening, but he wanted to let you all know about, for anyone who lives in Brisbane, he is the company assistant at the Brisbane Arts Theatre, and they certainly put on many very entertaining and very worthwhile shows throughout the year. In previous times, I have been in some of the shows at the Brisbane Arts Theatre, and it's certainly worth getting along to them. He also helps out behind the scenes in another podcast called Smart Enough to Know Better, which is also very worthwhile. I do subscribe to that one personally, and it is very entertaining. And if you are a fan of Smart Enough to Know Better or of theatre, the guys behind Smart Enough to Know Better are currently over at the Perth Fringe Festival. And they're doing their very well-reviewed and very popular adaptation of Speed, the movie, the play. They've got a few of these now, and again, very entertaining. And certainly, if you're over in Western Australia and here to the Perth Fringe Festival, check that one out. Christian, do you have anything to plug?
Oh, I've always got lots of things. Thankfully, I've started up my events for the year. I say thankfully, meaning that keeps me busy and lots of things to do. So I will be launching Cult Movie Nights at Metro Arts, which you may remember, Trevor would remember from many years ago. I used to run things there. So I'll be back there at the newly refurbished cinema there doing cult movies as of the 27th every 2 months. And we will also have the return of The Room on Friday, the 10th of November at the Globes. At New Globe Theatre in the Valley, so I've spoken about the Citizen Kane of bad movies, so if you want to experience something like this, I definitely recommend getting along to that. Another couple of things, we might be doing a George Michael tribute. Believe it or not, I wasn't going to do something, but the requests still keep coming in, so have a look out for that in the next few weeks, and also possibly Rocky Horror, Roaring Twenties, John Waters, many different things, so head to Christian Fletcher Events on Facebook or christianfletcher.com.
Absolutely, and just to mention, these are all around Brisbane, Australia. Yep, if you're in Brisbane or you're coming to Brisbane, definitely check out ChristianFletcher.com for some very, very good stuff indeed that even I'm occasionally involved in, so there you go. From my side of things, of course, with regards to the Rufus Project, to keep up to date with that, you can go to our homepage, rufusproject.com, or we have our Twitter and Facebook, Rufus Project Twitter and Facebook pages. We're on iTunes. You can get in touch with us by heading to our homepage and leaving comments below this episode, through social media or by sending us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com. We'd also love it if you shared, reviewed, rated, anything you can do with a podcast, please do it, because, you know, we'd love to get more people on board, and we would love to hear from you. If that's not enough podcast stuff for you, there's also the other Rufus Project related podcast on the Rufus Project Network. We have two podcasts, I can call it a network, which is What the History, which I do with my wonderful wife, Susie. Again, she has been on the podcast a few times. If you listen to our episode on Burlesque, the movie, Susie came in there because she was also a burlesque performer as our resident expert on how burlesque was. And, that's a really, really fun little one. We look at two bite-sized bits of bizarre history. It's a nice quick listen to. It usually runs 15 to 20 minutes, so you can listen to it at any time, and we've got a few episodes under our belt now, so that's certainly worth checking out. It is also on iTunes. Whew.
Fantastic. So we're covered all around with podcasts. So yeah, and there's plenty of ways you can get in touch with us and listen, as you can hear, as you've said. So
yep, so, and Trevor, of course, all these links and stuff will be in the description of the podcast down below. So if you didn't write down that damn fast enough, you can go below and just start clicking madly, and you'll find cool stuff.
Nice and easy. We've made it easy for everybody, so no excuses.
None whatsoever. And so, I think with that, we need to bring our season opener, that makes to a close. That was not a good sentence.
We knew what you meant. I know we didn't redeem the movie. As I said, I think it's very fitting that we started with an irredeemable movie, because I suppose that's what we're here to do, is talk about these movies and, where possible, redeem them. But otherwise, just have a really great time or a great chat, which always seems to come out on top over the movie, whether it's good, bad, or otherwise.
Absolutely. So, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with Harum Scarum from 1965. I'm still processing that. Always want to leave a try.
But we know that you can get your revenge, Trevor, the following week. So
there we go. I have to think of something. I'm not actually after revenge. Jeez,
I'm only kidding.
And of course, if anyone out there has any suggestions, or movies they think either deserve redeeming or you think would be a very good challenge for us, again, let us know. We're always open to suggestions from others as well.
Definitely. And because there's many more movies I'm sure we haven't even touched yet, so always looking for some feedback for those.
Excellent. So I think that's enough rambling. So
yes.
Yeah, until next time, see you later.
Bye.
Seamless podcast edit here. We forgot to mention that we will also give you a taste of what we are subjecting ourselves to next time. So sit back and listen to this extract from the Harum Scarum trailer. See, wasn't that a seamless edit into the podcast?
Across the burning sands rides a dauntless stranger, meeting every challenge with flashing sword and bare-handed daring. Where does he come from? Who is he?
Bye.
Seamless podcast edit here. We forgot to mention that we will also give you a taste of what we are subjecting ourselves to next time. So sit back and listen to this extract from the Harum Scarum trailer. See, wasn't that a seamless edit into the podcast?
Across the burning sands rides a dauntless stranger, meeting every challenge with flashing sword and bare-handed daring. Where does he come from? Who is he?
Well, I'm the Sheikh of Araby.
Go east, young man. You'll feel like a sheik. So
would you mind telling me where I am?
In the Garden of Paradise, noble master.
With dancing girls at your command. Go eat and drink and feast. Go east, young man.
Go east, young man. Elvis takes his own advice and plunges into the wildest, wackiest adventures of his entire career. Lured by a desert temptress into an Arabian rumble.
Give the American a foretaste of things to come.
Risking his neck for dames he never saw before. And seconds later, he's singing them love songs.
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm BB, says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.